He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
It's a term that I haven't heard for years, but I really think it applies now more than maybe ever before. And that's the term, the silent majority. Have you all heard that? You don't hear it anymore. You don't hear it. When people start cutting up their credit cards at Macy's and won't go to Macy's anymore, when all of these things, and that's a big story, but nobody wants to write it, that's fine. I don't care about me. But when you see the kind of power that the silent majority has, and the silent majority is a problem. They want to go out. They want to lead a good life. They want to work hard. They want to have their family. They don't want to be involved in coming here and waiting on a line for hours and hours and coming in and listening to Trump. But the silent majority is back, and we're going to take the country back. And we are going to make America great again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We are going to take the country back. Back from whom? Donald Trump has reincarnated Richard Nixon's silent majority, that quietly disgruntled mass of angry, frustrated, mostly white voters whose smoldering resentment of government and society Richard Nixon stoked so well into blazing support. President Nixon was able to stir sufficient fear of social change back then, of those of you old enough to remember, to generate energy among a conservative base of voters that had grown lethargic. Nixon easily winning election and then re-election. Back then in the second half of the 1960s, you had this awakened mass of voters who were reacting, let's face it, to what many felt were the liberal excesses of the day, the social sexual revolution, the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement. Things were changing fast. You had kids who were making love, not war. Kids who said they didn't trust anybody over 30. They were having sex, abortion, smoking dope, evading the draft. Taking over popular culture back then, they were. And yet a majority of usually reserved, even indifferent mainstream white Americans who did not approve of that revolution. So you had the voters in the demographic that dominated many of the states in those days, especially in the South, where, remember, you had black and Latino voters who were still largely disenfranchised. So you had the silent majority and their success, the silent majority in 1968, when Nixon beat Humphrey, a popular vice president. 1972, he beat George McGovern. He trounced George McGovern. And then you had a giant retrenchment. You had the so-called movement was put in its place. In terms of politics, Nixon was triumphant. He captured almost all of the white Southern vote, almost all of the suburban white vote, including those who previously supported Democrats who were racialist, I mean, racial activists or racists, even governors George Wallace, Lester Maddox, that crowd. Them and many others, many whose politics were far more moderate, but who were experiencing disquiet from the turmoil in society. They kind of woke up and they voted in droves. And if it wasn't for Watergate, I think there would have been uninterrupted GOP rule for decades. That was the success of the silent majority. Now, you have Donald Trump apparently trying to harness that white fear, resentment of change. He's defining his supporters now as a new silent majority. A new silent majority. Now, I don't quite get the difference between the new silent majority and the Tea Party movement. I think they largely ply the same waters. Nothing wrong with that. I think, and this is my main point, the only thing new is that the silent majority is no longer a majority. I mean, face it, the strength of the silent majority these days, the silent majority as it's defined by Donald Trump, and when you check out his supporters, it's made up disproportionately from less educated, less successful, middle-aged white guys. Nothing wrong with that. Only math. That's the only weakness of his strategy here. That group represents a shrinking segment of the national electorate. The country has changed. It's changing rapidly. I mean, in 1996, one in six American voters were from a racial or ethnic minority. One in six, 1996. In 2012, the last presidential election, one in four were racial or ethnic minorities. You have America's non-white population approaching 40%. There'd be a majority of all Americans by about 2050. A majority. White people will be a minority in America in less than 35 years. In 2012, according to the CNN exit polls, and herein lies the problem for Donald Trump now and his new silent majority approach. He had 93% of black people voting for Barack Obama. You had 71% of Latinos voting for Barack Obama. You had 73% of Asians supporting President Obama over Governor Romney. All told, Mitt Romney captured 17% in 2012 of the non-white population. So now you have Donald Trump. I love the guy. And he may very well win the Republican primary. He may win the GOP nomination by winning the hearts and minds of that new silent majority, as he describes them. And let's face it, there's no doubt but that Trump's promises of the Great Wall, mass deportations, his jousting with the Univision anchor Jorge Ramos, undoubtedly those tactics play well to the crowd, that crowd, the new silent majority, Trump's new silent majority. But I have news for you. You subtract the female vote and the social issues, the racial and ethnic minorities. There's not enough in that silent majority for Trump to win the White House. It may win the GOP nomination. It is a sure losing strategy if you want to be president of the United States these days. Like it or lump it. That's the way it is. Okay, I got so much more to talk about, but I want to take a couple of questions on what I have just said. I want to sum it up by saying simply that Trump may have re-energized what used to be described in Richard Nixon's days as the silent majority. But it is not enough to win. If he, as I said last night on Sean Hannity's show, on my buddy Sean Hannity's show last night on Fox News, the Republican nominee needs a substantial percentage of the Latino vote, needs to do better among the African-American voters and Asian voters if he or she is going to win. The new silent majority is a losing strategy. In White Plains, we start with Tony. Thanks for calling 866-Geraldo. Tony, what's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, Geraldo, I'd like to answer your opening question. He's talking about taking America back from people like that, that think like you, the Pablo Puken people. Who's a phony, make him believe you're a Republican and you're really a liberal Democrat. That's what he's talking about.
All right, now you've made that point. So Well, and then how does he do it?
How does he do it?
Yeah.
By all the people that are going to vote for him and talking about what people talk about every day all over the country, what they're sick and tired of, this phony BS. Like people like you, if I had a friend, you claim that you're Donald Trump's friend? If I had a friend like you, I'd be friends with my enemy.
Okay, Tony, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Tony's exactly what I'm talking about. Is Tony the majority of the country? That's the question, isn't it? Is Tony the majority of the United States of America right now? Is Soma in Ridgewood? Hi, Soma.
Yes. It's Geraldo, not for nothing. I love you. Like I said, I'm a nice Hispanic woman, like you're a nice Hispanic man. But you are talking along racial lines. You sound like Chopton, who just lost his show. Okay, I want you to be successful because I know you're smart and everything, but you have to stop this thing with Donald Trump. I'm not so sure you're his friend. Because we have to stop that. We have to get to the bottom of the stuff that our country is losing big time. And we have to stop thinking in terms of, I'm a little darker than you, I'm a little lighter than you. Stop it. What does it matter that 40% of the people will be whites in 25 years? Whatever the hell it is. Who cares? We're all Americans. Let's get to
it. Here's where it counts, Soma. Here's where it matters. When you have policies like Donald Trump has announced, the Great Wall, mass deportations, taking on Jorge Ramos, etc., what you are doing is cementing America's political system into a racial system, wherein one party, the Republican Party, is largely the party of the white people, and the Democratic Party is largely the party of the people of color, Asian, Latino, Black, etc. That's the way it is. I submit that a truly successful Republican has to be a person much more like George W. Bush in 2004, who reaches across racial and ethnic lines, who says we're all in this together, who doesn't generate resentment, rather generates energy and patriotism and energy and inclusion. These aren't just kind of liberal pablum words. These are demographic realities. If you want to appeal to the Tonys of the world, that's great. But you're not going to be president of the United States. Donald Trump experiencing unprecedented success so far at this early stage of the selection process. He has now kind of given a new birth, a new life to the old expression, silent majority. And many commentators are suggesting that there is, and I know this irks so many of you, a racial connotation to the silent majority. You track the history of President Nixon's Southern strategy, for example, you know what I'm talking about. When you appeal to the fearful white majority in states where there has historically been racial tension. I mean, remember, George Wallace ran for president as a third party. He was leading in the old Confederacy, almost the whole of the old Confederacy. You tap that, plus you tap people like Tony who are just pissed off at Al Sharpton. You get a movement that can win you the GOP nomination. There are a lot of people, a lot of suburban voters who don't like the direction of the world. But it is unfortunately breaking down on racial lines. And if you deny that, then you deny the obvious. Just look at the crowds. Who shows up? In Mobile, Alabama, who showed up? You know, that's the reality that national politicians have to deal with. This is not Richard Nixon's America. And it can't be Richard Nixon's GOP. Actually, Nixon was pretty open-minded about every party needing liberals and conservatives. It was a very interesting aspect. He was smart enough to know that you wanted liberals and conservatives in both political parties, both main political parties. Nowadays, you don't have that. Nowadays, you get this whole rhino business, Republican in name only. You have people calling up and insulting my GOP credentials because I'm not a conservative. I am not a conservative, obviously not. But I'm a Republican, and those of you old enough to remember John Lindsay and Nelson Rockefeller and Jacob Javits and Louis Lefkowitz and who ran the Republican Party, not to mention in the much later era, George Pataki. All right, what are you thinking about 866 Geraldo? Kevin in New York. What's up, Kevin?
Thanks, Geraldo. Hey, I don't doubt your friendship with Trump because I know people can be friends even when they argue about stuff, you know.
I've been at Fox 15 years. I don't agree with anybody politically in that whole building.
I think you mean well, and I think Trump means well, too. Here's my thing.
Hold on one second. I appreciate that because that's the point.
Yes.
You can't attribute nefarious motives to someone just because you disagree with them, as Tony did.
Absolutely.
You know, I didn't want to be ultra defensive, but you can be sincere on both sides.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think what Jorge Ramos did really symbolized the problem. He cut in line. And then what he said, one of the things he said was very interesting, Geraldo. He said, you cannot deny citizenship to these millions of people. He actually said that. So again, the sense of entitlement. And again, I just want to say, Mexico deports everybody. Mexico deports Cubans. And furthermore, the machismo thing is going to work for Trump with the Latinos, as you hear them calling. They don't want the weak, pandering Bush, Geraldo. They want the man. They want Trump. A lot of Latinos on Facebook, you see Latinos. It's affecting them, too, illegal
immigration. I just saw a survey, though, that showed that over in the high 60s, disapprove of Trump. And that was before the Jorge Ramos thing. My thing about this, and you, Kevin, you tell me what you think. And I'd like to hear from Noam Layton, who I've hadn't heard from all morning. He's snoozing over there.
No, I'm not. I actually have a thought. I want you to finish your thought.
All right. My thought is basically that I lost my train of thought.
So you know what it is? I think you're spending too much time worrying about what he's saying during these primaries. I mean, we've known this all along. If you want to win the Republican primaries, especially the first couple ones where it's really conservative outside of New Hampshire, you have to run right. And then you moderate your views when you get the nomination.
Oh, here's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I get that. And go to 31, Chris. I get that. But this is the problem. Jorge Ramos is not running for president. Jorge Ramos is a broadcaster. You can call him an advocate, an immigrant spokesman. You can call him anything you want. But when Trump takes on Jorge Ramos, who cares about Jorge Ramos?
Well, let me answer that, because Ramos just issued a latest statement saying that this is his country. That's his latest thing. You know, here's what I'm saying. Trump should have just cut him off and said, listen, you deport everyone in Mexico. You deport Cubans.
But why have a debate
who
with
are you
Jorge
to tell
Ramos?
Us? Who are you to tell us when you do what you do? Who are you to tell us? This is the point.
Why debate Jorge Ramos is my point. He's not running for president.
No, but he
It'd
is.
Be one thing if it was Marco Rubio.
Okay, but my point
or
is
Ted
that,
Cruz
is that
or Jeb Bush.
Trump,
then you debate them. You don't debate a
Trump
spokes
guy. Trump is electrifying
guy.
The base, Geraldo, and that's what he needs
the
to do.
The base is not big enough, is my
yes,
point.
Yes, it is. He's got Latinos are with him, man. I'm telling you.
Well,
go on Facebook.
Show me
look.
A survey.
Hispanics for Trump
show
on
me,
Facebook,
show me,
people.
I, show
Hispanics
me a survey.
For Trump. It's all
I
over
just
Facebook.
Saw, I'll look it up right now. No.
All right. Thanks,
I saw when 60,
take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
I saw when 68% disapproval before Jorge Ramos. Of Latinos.
You know, the part that bothered me most about that dust-up with Jorge Ramos is when he said, go back to Univision.
Go back to Univision.
I heard that as only one thing.
Of course you heard it as one thing, because it was one
now,
thing.
I'll look up that poll while we take this news break here, and I hope I can hopefully
How
find
can you look it up? You have to do the news.
I'm an amazing guy. I can do two things.
I also want to talk about what happened in Virginia and how the Democrats jumped on it and called for gun control. Even though gun control would not have altered the outcome in this case. We'll talk about that. And altering maybe the Second Amendment. I'll really get you pissed off.
I want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. It is that populist rage, I believe, that is fueling the extraordinary success Donald Trump is experiencing so far as he seeks the GOP nomination. But I want to settle one thing right now with the latest Gallup poll. The latest Gallup poll says Hispanics' views of most GOP candidates range from mildly positive to mildly negative. The sole exception, writes Gallup, is Trump, whose favorable rating with Hispanics is deeply negative. You want to know how deeply negative? First of all, let me tell you the positives. Jeb Bush has a net favorable rating among Hispanic voters of 11. Then the others drop off. Marco Rubio's got 5. Pataki's in there with 3. Those are the positives. So Jeb Bush has a positive net favorable among Hispanic voters of 11. Ted Cruz has a minus 7. Ted Cruz is the next worst. The worst is Donald Trump. See, if Ted Cruz has a negative 7, take a guess, Noam Layden, what Donald Trump's negative favorable percentage is among Hispanic
voters.
Wait,
now who has a negative 7?
Ted Cruz is the most, is the second most unpopular Republican among Hispanics.
Negative 25.
51.
Wow.
Donald Trump is negative 51, wow, according to the Gallup tracking poll as of August the 23rd. Net negative of minus 51 among Latino voters. And not only is it net negative, what is that? More than 7 times more negative than the next most negative, Ted Cruz. 51% net negative. It's not only that he is disliked by the Hispanic voters, but his stance will encourage voter registration among Hispanics, and it will encourage voter turnout among Hispanics, particularly among the young Hispanics. Don't you see how this is a disaster for the Republican Party going forward? You can't win the Republican, you can't win the presidency. You can win the Republican nominee. You can't win the presidency. I mean, with all the Spanish people in Arizona and New Mexico, just think about it. Texas, California, New York, Florida. Florida. There's 1 million new Puerto Rican residents in Florida since 2000, when you had the hanging Chad and all that. When you had Cuban Americans, the one Latino group that is conservative and leans Republican. Then the Cubans dominated the scene in Florida. Since then, you've had 1 million Puerto Ricans move in. That whole I-4 corridor from Orlando, from Daytona Beach to Orlando to Tampa to St. Pete and Sarasota and so forth. 1 million Puerto Ricans live there now. Florida's a swing state.
Yeah.
Who's going to swing it? I mean, you got to think practically.
Well,
yes,
so how do you vote then?
If you vote this way,
do you vote for the candidate that's going to has the best chance of winning, or do you vote for the candidate who you most identify with?
Obviously, everybody has to make that decision on their
own. But if the Republicans want the White House, should they say, "Hey, okay, this is our guy because we've done the testing, the polling, and he has the best shot of winning"? So he's going to moderate his views a little bit so he can get those swing votes in the middle that'll help him win. Because the electoral map is already against Republicans. Democrats already have the electoral map, so it already makes it tougher for them. So maybe that's what you have to do. Even when it comes to primary time, you have to go in and say, you know what, let's say Jeb Bush is that person. Jeb Bush is going to get the Hispanic vote.
He is.
I don't love him, but I agree with him on 70% of what he says. He seems a little wimpy, but you know what, if I want the White House, then I better vote for him. Either that or it's going to be a Democrat. Is that what I should be thinking?
The reason I liked Jeb Bush prior to Donald Trump, the phenomenon, the Hurricane Trump, was that he could win. I mean, with the Mexican-American wife, with his son, George P. Bush, as the highway commissioner there, roads, whatever it is in Texas, bilingual, Jeb Bush is, considerate, tough guy on the border security, and he talks about his, he's published a book on it. He has a comprehensive plan on immigration and control of the southern border, etc. He's just been so eclipsed by the brilliant star of Donald Trump, that Trump is gaining momentum at, even as Jeb Bush stabilizes or shrinks. But Jeb Bush, a positive 11% net favorable among Hispanic voters. Donald Trump, a negative 51%. That's a 62% swing. You know, you're not,
I think the Republicans are in a losing position, because if they start to back a more conservative candidate, you know, I don't mean conservative like Trump, but like somebody who's not as boisterous as Trump, then they face the wrath of Donald Trump and maybe a third party run by him. And so they almost can't win. I think they have to wait and see how this finishes.
I think that, you know, I had a conversation with Donald, and I said, you know, just moderate the language. I mean, why that thing with Jorge Ramos? Was that a smart thing? It was a smart thing because it got the Tonys of the world. Yeah, that punk deserved it. That immigrant advocate, get out of my country, all that stuff, even though he's a naturalized citizen. But, I mean, be that as it may. I mean, why you have that fight? Well, you just take the guy's question. You don't like him.
Well, he was rude. He interrupted the press conference. So he's allowed to say, hey, you're rude.
Did you ever hear Sam Donaldson?
Yeah, Sam Donaldson was rude too, but you know, the president didn't take his
questions.
Did you
see Hillary Clinton yesterday on the, you know, she's trying to make a statement about something, and, you know, the my colleagues at Fox and others shouting questions at her? Reporters are rude.
Right.
I mean, that's a part of being a pushy reporter is you're rude.
No doubt.
But do you want to slug it out with every rude ass that you encounter? I mean, is that, can you imagine how you're going to be? How are you going to win with that? Who are you going to? You don't fight everybody. You save your ammo for the people you really need to beat. You know, Jorge Ramos, this guy made Jorge Ramos a saint. San Jorge now in the among Mexican Americans. You know, they're all going to be watching Univision now. And you know what Univision's going to be doing? Every day, all day? Be sure to register to vote.
Yeah.
Turn on, register to vote. Tenemos que votar. Let's, you know, it's gonna have a movement now. You're going to have this relatively lethargic population now totally juiced in the same way the Tea Party new silent majority is juiced. You can't win the presidency with one ethnic group, one racial group anymore in this country.
Well, especially if they're white.
You can't. I'll take one, and then I'll take Eddie and Whitestone. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, you know, I've been listening to you for a long time.
Thank you.
And the other day, you were complaining that the rest of the media was paying too much attention to Trump. For the past week, all you've been doing is paying attention to Trump. It seems as if this immigration thing has just crawled underneath your skin, and you can't scratch it out. Yesterday, okay, you say you're a Republican. Yesterday, you got Hillary Clinton, a number one in the Democratic Party. She compared Republicans to terrorists on women's issues. And does one word utter from your mouth complaining about that? Republicans as terrorists? Come on. You got to start being a little bit more fair. And look, you got 14 months for the election. If you're going to do this immigration thing and Trump and bashing them all the time, your show's going to get canceled. It's like, you know, pathetic. People are getting bored. Move on.
I think it's just been renewed for 3 years.
Besides immigration, there's a lot more other important things to talk about.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, and I'll do you one better. Hillary Clinton makes an outrageous statement that compares Republicans to terrorists when it comes to women's rights.
Yep.
And because of Jorge Ramos, you didn't hear about it. You didn't hear about it. Why didn't you hear about
again.
It?
You're using the hook.
I'm not.
Ramos
I am right.
Is the hook
I am right.
Again.
The reason I've been in
Come
this
on,
business
Ramos
45
is
years is I know something. And I know what I'm talking about. Look, Eddie, I love you, brother, but I got to take a commercial break. In reference to the caller just before the commercial break about Hillary labeling Republicans' attitudes toward women kind of on a par with terrorism, the strongest thing I think that Republicans have going for them right now is the weakness of the probable Democratic nominee. Hillary is not playing well. Now, whether it is a function of familiarity, whether the barrage of the constant scandal and pseudo-scandal is wearing on her, whether it's just age or fatigue or illness or her husband's history, whatever it is, Hillary is not resonating in a way. She has not electrified. I read now that Bernie Sanders, the kind of last of the hippie standing, the independent senator from Vermont, has just passed her in New Hampshire. How extraordinary is that? That the candidate, Bernie Sanders, that all of us thought would be, oh, kind of, it was kind of like Donald Trump. In the beginning, the very beginning, cast your minds back to last May, or even when I was doing The Celebrity Apprentice. And he asked me, should I run for president? And I said, yes, boss, you should run, but you've got to really run. You can't just keep teasing people as you've done in the last few election cycles. If you're going to run, you got to run. But it was a long shot. It was such a long shot. Bernie Sanders wasn't probably an equal long shot. I won't say one was more of a more improbable than the next, but both were very, very much in the world of implausibility. Now you have Trump leading by far, as the Republican Party takes this adventure. And now you have Bernie Sanders coming up on the other side, on the left. The only time that Hillary Clinton did anything in recent days and weeks that caught my eye, that I said, ah, there she is, was when she expressed her remorse and condolences over the shooting in the news of the news people in Virginia. And she had kind of a white outfit on, so she wasn't wearing those horrible jumpsuits that make her look like she's 150 years old. I mean, I don't know who thinks that's a good idea, those jumpsuits. I mean, why doesn't she have a dress? She should wear dresses.
Or a suit.
Or a suit, a nice suit, but not a pants suit. Anyway, she really seemed sincere. She seemed deeply touched. She seemed deeply affected. And this leads me into what I want to talk about. Not that I'm not going to take your calls on Trump as we go forward. But the Daily News, you see the Daily News? Yesterday, you know, you have both tabs, putting the actual moment of the assassination of the young reporter and her cameraman. Today, the Daily News has an almost equally stunning front page. America's full of it, is the headline. And then the subhead is, since Newtown, 84,523 people have been killed by guns in the U.S. We cry. We get angry. We demand action. Then we forget. Until the next time. The Daily News is absolutely right. But that doesn't make it any more effective in fixing the problem that they're complaining about. It turns out that the gun that the nut job purchased in Virginia was purchased legally. So they call for gun control. What does gun control really mean? If you have someone who's not been arrested, who's not on a terrorist no-fly list, who's not on a domestic dispute where violence is alleged, who has none of the obvious markers, and he passes a federal background check, how do you stop it? There is a way. But if you think you were mad at me for criticizing Trump's characterization and treatment of Latinos, wait until the next hour when I tell you how the only way we can fix this epidemic of gun violence. It has to do with the Constitution.
Rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
52 years ago, the Reverend Martin Luther King, 52 years ago today, Reverend Martin Luther King uttered those immortal words as he stood looking out at the reflecting pool, the hundreds of thousands gathered, the Lincoln Memorial. You don't hear political speeches like that anymore. You don't. President Obama tries, but he just doesn't have the gravitas. Even though he's been president for 7 years, he just...
In Charleston, he sort of hit that moment, I thought.
Yeah, when, that was his best. The Amazing Grace, the singing of Amazing Grace, because they went off prompter.
Yeah.
And Trump's right about that. They should ban prompters. Martin Luther King didn't use a prompter.
No.
Nowadays, it's all you look left, you look right. Trump's right. They should ban prompters. Another thing that that Trump says, welcome back, 7 minutes after 11 o'clock. On this, the last Friday of August, it is Friday the 28th, scant days left to summertime. Soon the kids will be back in school if they're not already. Well, life will resume its normal pattern. We got to live through hurricane season first. So that Hurricane Danny, I spoke to folks down there. That was pretty good. It turned into just a soaking event. You know, terrible drought has hit Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. So Danny was just 2 to 4 inches of torrential rain. That was good. Although this latest one, Tropical Storm Erica, way too much water in the Leeward and Windward Islands. You saw the flooding in Dominica. Now, I don't know what's happening right now in Puerto Rico, but it looks like it is also just a rain event, and it may not even be a hurricane when
it
reaches here.
Well, it's wind and rain in Puerto Rico right now, and they just don't know, but they're getting ready in Florida just in case.
Okay, so back to this topic, and fasten your seatbelts because you're not going to like it. Here you have the 14th Amendment, which is extraordinarily become part of the political debate. Because of the whole notion of birthright citizenship. Donald Trump, principally, but others as well, Ted Cruz is in on it, say that the way they read the 14th Amendment, it does not and should not be construed to grant automatic citizenship to all children born in the country, regardless of circumstance. Now, Trump says that as presently construed by the courts, the amendment is not fair to the American people. And he has a point, right? I mean, in absolute financial terms, or in terms of equity. Why, Trump asks, if a pregnant Mexican or Chinese woman comes to the country with the sole intent of having a baby, birthing a baby on U.S. territory, why should that child thereby qualify for all the rights and privileges that appertain to real, quote-unquote, citizens in the country? So if the lawsuit doesn't work, there's even talk of amending the 14th Amendment. Amending it. Amending, messing with the Constitution of the United States. Amending the Constitution. To do that, of course, you need majority of both houses. I think you need 60 votes. Then you have to have it ratified by three-fourths of the states. Then two-thirds of the Congress has to vote on it. I mean, that's why you never got the Equal Rights Amendment for women, even during the height of the women's movement in the 70s, because it's such an onerous process. Amending the Constitution in the United States is very difficult, and it should be very difficult because you don't want to mess with that founding document. But the fact is that advocates of the abolition of birthright citizenship want to amend the 14th Amendment. They want to alter the 14th Amendment. So now that brings you back to the Daily News. Since Newtown, the horrible massacre of those children in Sandy Hook Elementary School up in Connecticut, since then, 84,523 people have been killed by guns in the United States. 84,523. Around 33,000 a year. Many or more than half suicide, the other murders, homicides. 84,523 since Newtown. The news editorial writers goes on to say, or headliner writer goes on to say, we cry, we get angry, we demand action, then we forget until the next time. And it is absolutely gut-wrenching when you see people like the father of the young lady murdered, Andy Parker. Andy Parker, his daughter Allison, along with her cameraman Adam Ward, murdered by the freak, the crazy, crazy black guy. All right, now here is the father. Here is Andy Parker talking about what we should do to fix what ails us as a nation and this gun violence. Here's Andy.
And the problem that you guys have is that, and I know it's the news business, and this is a big story, but next week, it isn't going to be a story anymore, and everybody's going to forget it. But you mark my words, my mission in life, and I talked to the governor today, he called me, and he said, and I told him, I said, I'm going to do something, whatever it takes to get gun legislation to shame people, to shame legislators into doing something about closing loopholes and background checks and making sure crazy people don't get guns.
How do you make sure that crazy people don't get guns? When the NRA and gun advocates say the Second Amendment gives everyone the right to keep and bear arms. Everyone that's not on, you know, the proscribed lists. Second Amendment. I think what Andy Parker and others have to do is to start a movement like the conservative movement to alter the 14th Amendment for the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is stupid. It's a stupid amendment, in my opinion. It's stupid. The right to keep and bear arms allows this guy, it allows people to buy guns. How many, is there even a limit on guns you can buy in Virginia? I know they're trying to put a one gun a month limit to keep people from just buying them and then reselling to people who don't qualify. I don't even think there's a limit on the guns you could go buy six of them. What are you going to use them for? What are you going to use that AR-15 for? I don't even know if they still make that, the civilian version of the AK-47. So you try to limit it. You try to limit people. You're trying to take the gun out of my hand. How can you do that? It's Second Amendment, Second Amendment. Alter the Second Amendment. Let the Second Amendment say right to keep and bear arms within appropriate limits as decided by somebody or so forth. So if you're in favor of amending the 14th Amendment, if you think that that's even conceivable, then why not the Second Amendment? I think that you've got to do something. There's a chart. I show Noam. You can't see it. You see that chart?
I do.
All right. Look at the United States on the right.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
The United States, gun-related murder rates. The United States is maybe 30% higher than the next country, which is Chile. Then it goes Turkey, Switzerland, Belgium, Italy, Bulgaria, Ireland, Canada, Sweden, Finland, Portugal, Netherlands, Greece, New Zealand, Austria, Spain, Germany, Estonia, Denmark, Slovakia, Czech Republic, France, United Kingdom, Norway, Poland, Hungary, Australia, Israel, Iceland, South Korea, and Japan, where nobody was killed by a gun. So you have the United States, this vast gun-related murder rate, so much higher than any other civilized nation. Firearm homicides per 100,000 people, the United States is well over 3 per 100,000. Chile's the next with 2 per 100,000. And then the third one is 1 per 100,000, and then under 100,000. That's Turkey. We have the highest gun-related murder rate in the developed world. And this man, Andy Parker, is absolutely right. If Sandy Hook didn't alter our views toward guns, when you had, 26 people killed, most of them 6-year-olds, right? didn't change our attitude toward guns at all. Second Amendment. Then this story is just going to happen again, right? I'm shocked that it doesn't happen more often with all the guns in the hands of so many crazy people, so many nut jobs, black, white, brown, indifferent. 300 million guns in this country. The NRA, if you think Trump reacts hostily to someone criticizing him, the NRA, they made the mold. They go after you viciously. If you're an elected official, you oppose the NRA's policy on guns for everybody. They put money into your opponent. They beat you at the primary. So it forces even intelligent people like Marco Rubio to then be proponents of the Second Amendment because you're so afraid of this gun lobby. We are slaves in this country to the gun lobby. Slaves. We are fearful of people, these whores, gun whores, who don't care who has a gun until it comes to their backyard. It's crazy. And so you hear Hillary Clinton, and I said a nice thing about her. I said it was the first time I saw humanity there in the whole campaign. She wasn't shrill for that minute. I mean, the next day she was shrill again. But for that minute, she seemed very sensitive, very touched. We heard from the president. So what? So what? What are they going to do about it? What has President Obama done about it? Nothing has happened since Jim Brady got shot and Ronald Reagan was shot in front of the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. And then the Brady Law, all day, they expired. They went away, and now everyone has automatics again, semi-automatics, military-style, blah, blah. Gun-related murder rates in the developed world were 3 times worse than Turkey. Okay, welcome back. It's all about you now. I had some things on my mind. I had to get off my chest. Is that mixing my metaphors? They were on my mind. I got them off my chest. I didn't get them off my mind. My heart. All my organs are engaged.
Every one of them.
Every one of them. Every one from top to bottom. You know, it's funny. I did the, speaking of organs, I did the Steve Harvey Show, airs September 8th or 9th, his debut show, first show. I hadn't done a daytime talk show in quite a while, but I did Steve's. He's coming on this program to promote it on the next week, the build-up to the launch of the show, September 8th. And is that next week?
2 weeks. I think it's a Tuesday.
Two weeks. Yeah. But one of the things we talk about, it's on tape, obviously, before a live audience of 2,000 men, and there are 200 women on the stage. And it was a panel on men's advice to women on personal stuff. And so they asked for comments about a lot of things, one of which was, remember when Lenny Kravitz had the wardrobe malfunction?
Yes.
And his junk fell out?
Right.
And he, took forever to put it back in? So basically, I said, if that happened to me and I was like him and I had to fold it in half to put it back in, I might take a while
to do it too.
But I'm not sure that joke plays. You know, in radio, talking to you,
you didn't get a laugh there?
I got a lot of hard looks. I can't wait.
Well, it's like a Midwestern crowd. It's in Chicago. Well, maybe it's a little different.
And the crowd I'm really worried about is the crowd, on 90th and Madison.
Oh, she doesn't know about it yet. No. Huh? Maybe you can keep her away from the TV that day.
Yeah, right. No, you don't watch that. That's that daytime TV.
It's junk.
Yeah, come on, it's junk. That's why I left that business. All right, so what's on your mind, now that we've discussed my bodily functions? It's in Hicksville. Mario's on the line. What's up, man? Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo?
I'm doing okay. Getting a little beat up today, but I can take it.
Yeah. You stepped in it a couple minutes ago. I got to tell you, my friend, I listen to you every day. I love you. It's nothing personal, but you take on that Second Amendment, it becomes a very touchy thing. Now, to go along with that, I want to know when you're just going to get behind Trump and back him already. You say he's a friend, but every time...
I think that's a great question. Let me answer it.
Go ahead.
Because Sean Hannity asked me the same question a couple of nights ago. And I love the guy. And I think that character, strength of character, is very important. Energy and charisma, also very important. But unless he modifies this view toward an immigrant population that looks a lot like the people in my family, then I would be a traitor to back him. Now, that does not mean, I hasten to add, that he can't be tough on immigration, on undocumented immigrants, on illegal immigration. God bless. That's a point of view. It's just like abortion. I don't agree with the outlawing of abortion either. I'm a pro-choice person, but I don't. I could vote for someone who is anti-abortion if they are people of good character and they hold the view sincerely, and it's a, whether it's a religious, you know, I am an open-minded person. My friends are all over the place when it comes to political ideology and personal preferences and personal points of view. But what they cannot do is demonize the other side. In other words, as a pro-choice person, I can't have an anti-abortion person demonizing people who are pro-choice as murderers. I can't have people who are anti, wave of undocumented immigrants. I can't have them demonizing an entire race of people. So what he has to do, let me finish, Mary. I'm going to let you talk, but let me finish. What Trump has to do to get my support isn't changing his views. It's moderating his tone and explaining in a way that is much more humane, compassionate, inclusive, and understanding exactly how he would do some of the things that he proposes. Go ahead, Mario.
All right. Thank you, Geraldo. Now, I'm Puerto Rican as well, so I have a lot of family members, and there's a lot that cross the border that look like my family members, all right? I love the Latin community. I grew up with the Latin community. That's all I know is the Latin community. But I feel that a lot of people are making these decisions based with their heart and not what's right and what's wrong. And we need to get this country back on track. And without somebody who's outspoken and as brash as somebody as Trump is, that's the only way that it's going to get done. Now, with that said, they still have the possibility. I can understand where he would be wrong if he said, they're going out of this country and they're never going to be allowed back in again. And that's it. We're closing the doors to everything. But he's not saying that. What he's saying is you follow the rules, and those who did follow the rules, by the way, are going to be allowed to stay here. And good for them. And that's their reward for doing it the right way and the correct way. Okay? Now, my second point is you mentioned that Trump goes out and he's going to fight everybody. He's going to tire himself out fighting everybody. I disagree with you on that. He's not fighting everybody. Well, let's take Megyn Kelly, for instance, all right? She's all right. I have nothing personal against her. But you know what? She stepped in it. And Trump, I believe, is taking an example out of her. When a guy is going to hold a position like that, he has to keep everyone.
You know, you can't. Making examples out of people, to me, is not presidential. It's not. I don't want to make an example of Megyn Kelly. I want to make an example of Vladimir Putin. That's what presidents do, not the barroom brawls. Still the one. You know who's still the one? Trump's still the one. I love the guy. You know, callers, I love you too. I mean, even if you beat up on me, I still love you. That's what makes this show different. That everybody is welcome here. Everybody, regardless of your point of view, this is where everyone could get together. This is like the one place in all of the radio landscape where everybody is welcome. Right, left, center. Doesn't matter where you come from. Doesn't matter how impassioned your approval or disapproval of what I have to say is. I want to hear from you. And when I get on one of my rants or rambles and I don't get to the calls for a while, I enormously appreciate your patience. Like Joan in Queens has been holding on. Thank you so much for holding on and welcome.
Yes. I'd like to respond to the question of taking it back from taking it back from who. Let me just set it up, Joan,
and then I'll let. What Trump is saying, we have to take our country back. We have to make America great again. I want the new silent majority. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. Now, I'm not a public speaker, so please allow me to express myself. For one thing, this president has acted like an emperor, threatening to override any veto that Congress does not approve of any law that he wants to pass, decimating the military while he apologizes always for America to our enemies, not following through on threats, and at the same time, we don't even have a strong military anymore. Another thing, I believe that he has instigated the blacks to carry out this anarchy that's going on, because instead of telling them, when the jury came to a conclusion, we have to accept their conclusion, all he could say is, that could have been my son, or the police made a stupid error. This is not presidential at all. And another thing, he never enforced the laws on the border. And I blame Bush, too, for this. I blame Bush, too, because if they had nipped this in the bud, it would not be the invasion that it is now. And this is an invasion. Now, you wonder why people feel so animated about illegal aliens. I'll tell you why. They are getting benefits that I have to pay for. My husband is in a hospital right now. I have to pay for his care. But an illegal alien can get everything free, and that is not right.
Okay, I got you. I got it. Joan, I hope your husband is feeling better. I mean, what's the prognosis?
Thank you. Well, it's not too good, but...
I'm sorry about
that.
No. Oh, yeah. And thank you for calling.
All right.
You know, I could make the argument. I don't think people want to hear the argument. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office says the average undocumented immigrant contributes more to the U.S. Treasury than they take out. A lot of them have Social Security cards that are fake, so they pay into the Social Security trust fund benefits they will never redeem. They have, I don't want to go into this. It's not the argument about the worth of the 11 or 15 million, however many undocumented immigrants there are here, is almost cyclical. It's almost like, I don't think I've changed a single person's mind. I've written two books on it since 2007. I don't think I've changed a single person's mind. It's just like when the conservative guys write books. They don't change anybody's mind. What they do is they speak to a population that is reaffirmed when they see or hear something that they agree with. That's how talk radio has classically existed. It started AM talk radio as the one place where conservatives could go to hear their point of view represented, because it wasn't represented in the newspapers or in the network newscasts. So AM talk radio, driven by Rush Limbaugh and others before him, became the last refuge of the conservative. Now it's a little broader. Not much. It's not that different. You know, this show is still an outlier. We're still, you know, an unusual show outside of like NPR or something like that, where you have just the, you know, liberal points of view represented usually. So to debate it with you, to debate immigration with you, I think that that's kind of circular. This Second Amendment, this gun thing, though, the reason I throw that out is that is intentionally provocative in the sense that I believe this cavalier talk of altering the 14th Amendment to the federal Constitution to deny children born of undocumented immigrants citizenship is dangerous. You don't mess with the Constitution. We haven't had an amendment since the one that followed the death of Franklin Roosevelt about two-term limits. I forget which number it is. And for good reason. I mean, remember the amendment to the Constitution that outlawed alcohol? Then there had to be another amendment to the Constitution to unamend that amendment. But if you're going to start amending amendments, then start with the Second Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms, that was written for a time in our history in the 18th century where there were militias, where there was a king who was threatening to come in, where the trust of the federal government had not yet been established. Let me go to Lou. Hi, Lou in Queens. Hello, Lou, you there?
Yeah, hi. Hello.
How you doing, buddy? Thanks for calling. What's up?
Good to call you. You know, I think you're very right about you know, your general viewpoint about Trump. But on the other side, too, remember, this country has not really bought the George Soros, Occupy, Media Matters, left-wing kooks. They're not going to win an election either.
I agree.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm wondering one thing I got to ask you. Biden met Elizabeth Warren. He also met James Webb. How come we're not hearing about James Webb, who reminds me more of JFK than any Democrat since I remember?
Jim Webb from Virginia, a veteran, right? A decorated veteran. Wasn't he wounded also, as I recall? But he lost his last election, didn't he? I think that's why it's just like O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland. The former governor of Maryland is running for president. And then look at Baltimore, the largest city in Maryland. It's a garbage heap where the blood runs red in the streets. I think that neither of them, there hasn't been, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, well, you got Bernie Sanders, who's kind of kooky and independent, you know, from Vermont, you know, dope-smoking hippie. I mean, he's, then you got Walter O'Malley, the failed governor of Maryland. You had Jim Webb, who lost the election as a senator in Virginia. I look it up. I don't want to misstate, but I'm pretty sure that his career has not been on the upswing until he announced. You got a couple of professors, Harvard. I mean, it's a pretty thin crew running for the Democratic nomination. And I tell you, the strongest thing the Republicans have going for them is the weakness of the Democratic field, including most prominently the First Lady of the United, the former First Lady of the United States, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. You know, so I don't know where, Lou, and I appreciate the call, we find the next president. But I do not believe it's going to be a polarizing figure. It's got to be someone who tilts, like Romney. Romney was doing great until he tried to be a tough guy. And he wasn't really a tough guy. Trump is really a tough guy. He has to show that he could also be a person who has an aspect of moderation. Because we don't want a wild cowboy as the person in charge of the red button. We want a thoughtful, sober, experienced, strong, intelligent, open-minded leader. Confident, but not confident to the exclusion of reason. Romney nominated today in the year 2012. Nominated on this day in 2012. Roller coaster ride today. So what about Senator Jim Webb? Tell me about how his career ended in Virginia.
Well, you know, Vietnam vet, conservative Democrat, when he was elected back in 2009, he was against the president's health care plan and told him so. So he was really, you know, conservative Democrat. And come 2011, he decided, or 2012, he decided not to run again.
So he opted out voluntarily.
Yeah.
He didn't lose an election.
He would have had a re-election. Remember, it was George Allen who would have been his foe in the race.
Oh, the Redskins coach?
His son. It was George Allen
Jr. Oh, the son. Yeah. So, well, we interviewed him.
Yeah, I think a few times. So he opted out of the race and didn't run again. He had said, I never wanted a life in politics. I wanted to run once. And he said he got done what he wanted done, and he wanted out.
I wonder how much he won by or what his prospects were back then. But I wonder now, going back to if that is all accurate, and of course I have no reason to doubt you, why isn't he getting any kind of excitement? Why isn't anyone paying any attention to Senator Jim Webb?
Well, it is strange when someone only
wasn't he
does
secretary
one term.
Or something also?
I mean, he may have been. Yeah, I don't have that in front of me. But
yeah,
he did one term. And it was a pretty bruising campaign, if you remember, against George Allen. And in fact, George Allen may have won, except you remember he made that racial thing about African Americans.
No. It was the Indian guy, an Indian American reporter, not a Native American, but India.
Yeah, and he made this comment.
Something he called him some name.
Yeah, I can't remember what the word is.
Like Bojangos or something.
Yeah, something pretty awful. But it sort of sunk him right at the end.
Oh yeah, it definitely.
Otherwise, he probably would have won.
But you know, like with Trump, that doesn't happen. He was Secretary of the Navy, Jim Webb, Secretary of the Navy, Assistant Secretary of Defense. Counsel, let me see why it says he got. Why did he go away? He worked in the military service. He had great military service. Jim Webb. Well, we'll watch him. We'll watch him. A tenured senator. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I have a permit to carry a weapon in Virginia for a long time. I believe that it's important. It's important to me personally and to a lot of people in the situation that I'm in to be able to defend myself and my family. So he's pro Second Amendment. I guess he is a conservative in that sense. He announced way back in 2014 that he had an exploratory committee in preparation for a possible bid for the Democratic Party's nomination in 2016. So he made the announcement on his website, and now he's running. He made the formal announcement. He's seeking the Democratic Party's nomination. No one's paying any attention to him yet, but we will. We'll watch him.
The word was macaca. Remember?
Macaca. Yeah. That's what it was.
I still don't really know totally what that means, but apparently it's derogatory.
I don't know if I was an Indian. If it was used in the context of Puerto Rican Jews, I would not like it. I would not like it. Anyway, we're going to watch Jim Webb of Virginia, who is a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I wonder what Jim Webb is saying about the murder of Alison Parker and Adam Ward on live TV as a supporter of the Second Amendment. But remember what I said, if you're going to mess with the 14th Amendment, then I think you should pay some attention to that Second Amendment. If one's not sacrosanct, why should the other be? We're going to stop playing that game. But this has been. You have one more bite from Trump. This has been the summer of Trump. No matter what you think about the billionaire businessman who has totally shaken up, what would we be talking about? We certainly would not be obsessing about the election so far ahead of time if it were not for Donald Trump.
I think you're right about that. Yeah.
All right, so here's, you got it, Chris?
They have front page of the New York Times that I erupted. I never erupted. I never even raised my voice. In fact, much of the media, the fair media, even some of the liberal media said I really handled the situation well. Can you believe it? I was shocked. Shut. So, but now I'm on the front page of the New York Times saying, number one, I wear a toupee, and number two, I erupted at this guy, and number three, they said Hitler. I don't like that, okay? So the news media here, you can have it. Anybody want?
All right, so that's, he was kind of summing up. I don't know why he engages on that level, though. I mean, I understand that it gens up the crowd, but I don't know why he engages. But you see him when he invited the lady up on stage to test his
touch his hair.
He said,
because people love that.
Be careful.
I loved watching it. Yeah. Did you love watching it?
It was great. I love that. Yeah, I love that. And, I never pulled his hair, but I had no reason to believe it's anything other than his own. What are you going to do about guns? What are you going to do about immigrants, undocumented immigrants? They got their hands full. Haven't even talked. Imagine, we haven't even mentioned ISIS. Haven't mentioned ISIS. Oh, yesterday when I left work, four guys passed out on the sidewalk right outside my car.
From what?
I just sleeping there.